Chapter 12. The Return of Ulysses.
When it began to grow dark, Rat, with an air of excitement and mystery, summoned them back into the parlour, stood each of them up alongside of her little heap, and proceeded to dress them up for the coming expedition. She was very earnest and thoroughgoing about it, and the affair took quite a long time. First, there was a belt to go round each animal, and then a sword to be stuck into each belt, and then a cutlass on the other side to balance it, then a pair of pistols, a policeman's truncheon, several sets of handcuffs, some bandages and sticking plaster, and a flask and a sandwich case. Badger laughed good-humouredly and said,
"All right, dear, it amuses you and it doesn't hurt me. I'm going to do all I've got to do with this here stick."
But Rat only said,
"Please, Badger, you know I shouldn't like you to blame me afterwards and say I had forgotten anything."
When all was quite ready, Badger took a dark lantern in one paw, grasped her great stick with the other, and said,
"Now then, follow me. Mole first, because I'm very pleased with her. Rat next. Toad last. And look here, Toadie, don't you chatter so much as usual, or you'll be sent back, as sure as fate."
Toad was so anxious not to be left out that she took up the inferior position assigned to her without a murmur, and the animals set off. Badger led them along by the river for a little way, and then suddenly swung herself over the edge into a hole in the riverbank, a little above the water. Mole and Rat followed silently, swinging themselves successfully into the hole as they had seen Badger do. But when it came to Toad's turn, of course she managed to slip and fall into the water with a loud splash and a squeal of alarm. She was hauled out by her friends, rubbed down and wrung out hastily, comforted and set on her legs. But Badger was seriously angry and told her that the very next time she made a fool of herself, she would most certainly be left behind. So, at last, they were in the secret passage, and the cutting out expedition had really begun. It was cold and dark and damp and low and narrow, and poor Toad began to shiver, partly from dread of what might be before her, partly because she was wet through. The lantern was far ahead, and she could not help lagging behind a little in the darkness. Then she heard Rat call out warningly,
"Come on, Toad!"
And a terror seized her of being left behind, alone in the darkness, and she came on with such a rush that she upset Rat into Mole and Mole into Badger, and for a moment all was confusion. Badger thought they were being attacked from behind and, as there was no room to use a stick or a cutlass, drew a pistol and was on the point of putting a bullet into Lady Toad. When she found out what had really happened, she was very angry indeed and said,
"This time that tiresome Toad shall be left behind."
But Toad whimpered, and the other two promised that they would be answerable for her good conduct. And at last, Badger was pacified, and the procession moved on. Only this time, Rat brought up the rear with a firm grip on the shoulder of Toad. So they groped and shuffled along, with their ears pricked up and their paws on their pistols, till at last Badger said,
"We ought by now to be pretty nearly under the hall."
Then suddenly they heard, far away as it might be, and yet apparently nearly over their heads, a confused murmur of sound, as if people were shouting and cheering and stamping on the floor and hammering on the tables. Toad's nervous terrors all returned, but Badger only remarked placidly,
"They are going it, the weasels."
The passage now began to slope upwards. They groped onward a little further, and then the noise broke out again, quite distinct this time and very close above them.
Hooray! 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 Hooray!
they heard, and the stamping of little feet on the floor and the clinking of glasses as little fists pounded on the table.
What a time they're having,
said Badger.
Come on.
They hurried along the passage till it came to a full stop, and they found themselves standing under the trap door that led up into the butler's pantry. Such a tremendous noise was going on in the banqueting hall that there was little danger of their being overheard. Badger said,
Now, ladies, all together.
And the four of them put their shoulders to the trap door and heaved it back. Hoisting each other up, they found themselves standing in the pantry with only a door between them and the banqueting hall where their unconscious enemies were carousing. The noise as they emerged from the passage was simply deafening. At last, as the cheering and hammering slowly subsided, a voice could be made out saying,
Well, I do not propose to detain you much longer. But before I resume my seat, I should like to say one word about our kind host, Lady Toad. We all know Lady Toad.
Lady Toad.
Good Lady Toad. Modest Lady Toad. Honest Lady Toad.
Only just let me get at him,
muttered Toad, grinding her teeth.
Hold hard a minute,
said Badger, restraining her with difficulty.
Get ready, all of you.
Let me sing you a little song,
went on the voice,
which I have composed on the subject of Lady Toad.
Then the chief weasel, for it was he, began in a high, squeaky voice.
Toad, she went to trolloping gaily down the street.
Badger drew herself up, took a firm grip of her stick with both paws, glanced round at her comrades and cried,
The hour is come! Follow me!
And flung the door open wide. My! What a squealing and a squeaking and a screeching filled the air! Well might the terrified weasels dive under the tables and spring madly up at the windows. Well might the ferrets rush wildly for the fireplace and get hopelessly jammed in the chimney. Well might tables and chairs be upset and glass and china be sent crashing on the floor in the panic of that terrible moment when the four heroines strode wrathfully into the room. The mighty Badger, her whiskers bristling, her great cudgel whistling through the air, Mole, black and grim, brandishing her stick and shouting her awful war cry.
A mole! A mole!
Rat, fierce and determined, her belt bulging with weapons of every age and every variety. Lady Toad, frenzied with excitement and injured pride, swollen to twice her ordinary size, leaping into the air and emitting toad whoops that chilled them to the marrow.
Toad, she went to trolloping,
she yelled.
Oh, whopping is more like it.
And she charged straight at the chief weasel. They were but four in all, but to the panic-stricken weasels, the hall seemed full of monstrous animals, grey, black, brown and yellow, whooping and flourishing enormous cudgels, and they broke and fled with squeals of terror and dismay, this way and that, through the windows, up the chimney, anywhere to get out of reach of those terrible sticks. The affair was soon over. Up and down the whole length of the hall strode the four friends, whacking with their sticks at every head that showed itself. And in 5 minutes, the room was cleared. Through the broken windows, the shrieks of terrified weasels escaping across the lawn were borne faintly to their ears. On the floor lay prostrate some dozen or so of the enemy, on whom the mole was busily engaged in fitting handcuffs. Badger, resting from her labours, leant on her stick and wiped her honest brow.
Oh, mole,
she said.
You're the best of women. Just cut along outside and look after those stoat sentries of yours and see what they're doing. I have an idea that, thanks to you, we shan't have much trouble from them tonight.
Mole vanished promptly through a window, and Badger bade the other two set a table on its legs again, pick up knives and forks and plates and glasses from the debris on the floor, and see if they could find materials for a supper.
Oh, I want some grub, I do,
she said, in that rather common way she had of speaking.
Stir your stumps, Lady Toad. Look lively. We've got your house back for you and you don't offer us so much as a sandwich.
Toad felt rather hurt that Badger didn't say pleasant things to her as she had to Mole and tell her what a fine fellow she was and how splendidly she had fought, for she was rather particularly pleased with herself and the way she had gone for the Chief Weasel and sent her flying across the table with one blow of her stick. But she bustled about, and so did Rat, and soon they found some guava jelly in a glass dish and a cold chicken, a tongue that had hardly been touched, some trifle, and quite a lot of lobster salad. And in the pantry, they came upon a basketful of French rolls and any quantity of cheese, butter, and celery. They were just about to sit down when Mole clambered in through the window, chuckling with an armful of rifles.
It's all over,
she reported.
From what I can make out, as soon as the stoats, who were very nervous and jumpy already, heard the shrieks and the yells and the uproar inside the hall, some of them threw down their rifles and fled. The others stood fast for a bit, but when the weasels came rushing out upon them, they thought they were betrayed, and the stoats grappled with the weasels, and the weasels fought to get away, and they wrestled and wriggled and punched each other and rolled over and over till most of them rolled into the river. They've all disappeared by now, one way or another, and I've got their rifles, so that's all right.
Excellent and deserving animal,
said Badger, her mouth full of chicken and trifle.
Now, there's just one more thing I want you to do, Mole, before you sit down to your supper along with us. And I wouldn't trouble you, only I know I can trust you to see a thing done. And I wish I could say the same of everyone I know. I'd send Rat if she wasn't a poet. I want you to take those fellows on the floor there upstairs with you and have some bedrooms cleaned out and tidied up and made really comfortable. See that they sweep under the beds and put clean sheets and pillowcases on and turn down one corner of the bedclothes just as you know it ought to be done, and have a can of hot water and clean towels and fresh cakes of soap put in each room. And then you can give them a scolding, if it's any satisfaction to you, and put them out by the back door, and we shan't see any more of them, I fancy. And then come along and have some of this cold tongue. It's first rate. I'm very pleased with you, Miss Mole.
The good-natured Mole picked up a stick, formed her prisoners up in a line on the floor, gave them the order,
"Quick march!"
and led her squad off to the upper floor. After a time, she appeared again, smiling, and said that every room was ready and as clean as a new pin.
And I didn't have to scold them, either,
she added.
I thought, on the whole, they had had shaming enough for one night, and the weasels, when I put the point to them, quite agreed with me and said they wouldn't think of troubling me. They were very penitent and said they were extremely sorry for what they had done, but it was all the fault of the Chief Weasel and the stoats, and if ever they could do anything for us at any time to make up, we had only got to mention it. So I gave them a roll apiece and let them out the back, and off they ran as hard as they could.
Then Mole pulled her chair up to the table and pitched into the cold tongue, and Toad, like the dear woman she was, put all her jealousy from her and said heartily,
"Oh, thank you kindly, darling Mole, for all your pains and trouble tonight, and especially for your cleverness this morning."
Badger was pleased at that and said,
"There spoke my brave Lady Toad."
So they finished their supper in great joy and contentment and presently retired to rest between clean sheets, safe in Toad's ancestral home, won back by matchless valour, consummate strategy, and a proper handling of sticks. The following morning, Toad, who had overslept herself as usual, came down to breakfast disgracefully late and found on the table a certain quantity of eggshells, some fragments of cold and leathery toast, a coffee pot 3/4 empty, and really very little else, which did not tend to improve her temper, considering that, after all, it was her own house. Through the French windows of the breakfast room, she could see Mole and Rat sitting in wicker chairs out on the lawn, evidently telling each other stories, roaring with laughter and kicking their short legs up in the air. Badger, who was in an armchair and deep in the morning paper, merely looked up and nodded when Toad entered the room. But Toad knew better than to complain to Badger, so she sat down and made the best breakfast she could, merely observing to herself that she would get square with the others sooner or later. When she had nearly finished, Badger looked up and remarked, rather shortly,
"I'm sorry, Toad, but I'm afraid there's a heavy morning's work in front of you. You see, we really ought to have a banquet at once to celebrate this affair. It's expected of you. In fact, it's the rule."
All right,
said Toad, readily.
"Anything to oblige, only why on earth you should want to have a banquet in the morning, I cannot understand. But, you know, I do not live to please myself, but merely to find out what my friends want, and then try to arrange it for them. You dear old Badger."
"Don't pretend to be stupider than you really are,"
replied Badger, crossly.
"And don't chuckle and splutter in your coffee while you're talking. It's not manners. What I mean is, the banquet will be at night, of course, but the invitations will have to be written and got off at once, and you've got to write them. Now sit down at that table, the stacks of letter paper on it, with Toad Hall at the top in blue and gold, and write invitations to all our friends. And if you stick to it, we shall get them out before luncheon. And I'll bear a hand too, and take my share of the burden. I'll order the banquet."
"What?"
cried Lady Toad, dismayed.
"Me stop indoors and write a lot of rotten letters on a jolly morning like this, when I want to go around my property and set everything and everybody to rights and saunter about and enjoy myself? Certainly not. I'll see you. Now stop a minute, though. Yes. Why, of course, dear Badger. What is my pleasure or convenience compared with that of others? You wish it done, and it shall be done. Go, Badger. Order the banquet. Order what you like. Then join our young friends outside in their innocent mirth, oblivious to me and my cares and toils. I sacrifice this fair morning on the altar of duty and friendship."
Badger looked at her very suspiciously. But Toad's frank, open countenance made it difficult to suggest any unworthy motive in this change of attitude. She quitted the room, accordingly, in the direction of the kitchen, and as soon as the door had closed behind her, Toad hurried to the writing table. A fine idea had occurred to her while she was talking. She would write the invitations, and she would take care to mention the leading part she had taken in the fight, and how she had laid the chief weasel flat. And she would hint at her adventures, and what a career of triumph she had to tell about. And on the flyleaf, she would set out a sort of a programme of entertainment for the evening, something like this, as she sketched it out in her head.
"Speech by Lady Toad. There will be other speeches by Lady Toad during the evening. Address by Lady Toad. Synopsis. Our prison system, the waterways of old England, horse stealing and how to deal, property, its rights and its duties, back to the land, a typical English squire. Song by Lady Toad, composed by herself. Other compositions by Lady Toad will be sung in the course of the evening by the composer."
The idea pleased her mightily, and she worked very hard and got all the letters finished by noon, at which hour it was reported to her that there was a small and rather bedraggled weasel at the door, inquiring timidly whether he could be of any service to the ladies within. Toad sauntered out and found it was one of the prisoners of the previous evening, very respectful and anxious to please. She patted him on the head, shoved the bundle of invitations into his paw, and told him to cut along quick and deliver them as fast as he could. And if he liked to come back again in the evening, perhaps there might be a shilling for him, or, again, perhaps there mightn't, and the poor weasel seemed really quite grateful and hurried off eagerly to do his mission. When the other animals came back to luncheon, very boisterous and breezy after a morning on the river, Mole, whose conscience had been pricking her, looked doubtfully at Toad, expecting to find her sulky or depressed. Instead, she was so uppish and inflated that Mole began to suspect something, while Rat and Badger exchanged significant glances. As soon as the meal was over, Lady Toad feigned a languid yawn and remarked casually,
"Well, look after yourselves, you ladies. Ask for anything you want."
And was striding off in the direction of the garden, where she wanted to think out an idea or two for her coming speeches, when Rat caught her by the arm. Toad rather suspected what she was after and did her best to get away. But when Badger took her firmly by the other arm, she began to see that the game was up. The two animals conducted her between them into the small smoking room that opened out of the entrance hall, shut the door, and put her into a chair. Then they both stood in front of her, while Toad sat silent and regarded them with much suspicion and ill humour.
"Now look, Toad," said Rat. "It's about this banquet, and very sorry I am to have to speak to you like this. But we want you to understand clearly, once and for all, that there are going to be no speeches and no songs. Try and grasp the fact that on this occasion we are not arguing with you, we're just telling you."
Toad saw that she was trapped. They understood her. They saw through her. They had got ahead of her. Her pleasant dream was shattered.
"Mayn't I sing them just one little song?"
she pleaded piteously.
"No, not one little song,"
replied Rat firmly, though her heart bled as she noticed the trembling lip of the poor, disappointed Lady Toad.
"It's no good, Toadie. You know well that your songs are all conceit and boasting and vanity, and your speeches are all self-praise and gross exaggeration
And gas,"
put in Badger, in her common way.
"It's for your own good, Toadie,"
went on Rat.
"You know you must turn over a new leaf sooner or later, and now seems a splendid time to begin, a sort of turning point in your career. Please don't think that saying all this doesn't hurt me more than it hurts you."
Lady Toad remained a long while plunged in thought. At last, she raised her head, and the traces of strong emotions were visible on her features.
"Oh, you have conquered my sisters,"
she said in broken accents.
"It was, to be sure, but a small thing that I asked. Merely leave to blossom and expand for yet one more evening. To let myself go and hear the tumultuous applause that always seemed to me somehow to bring out my best qualities. However, you are right. I know, and I am wrong. Henceforth, I will be a very different Toad. My friends, you shall never have occasion to blush for me again. But oh dear, this is a hard world."
And pressing her handkerchief to her face, she left the room with faltering footsteps.
"Badger,"
said Rat,
"I feel like a beast. I wonder what you feel like."
"Oh, I know,
said Badger gloomily.
"But the thing had to be done. This dear woman has got to live here and hold her own and be respected. Would you have her the common laughing stock, mocked and jeered at by stoats and weasels?"
"Of course not,"
said Rat.
"And talking of weasels, it's lucky we came upon that little weasel just as she was setting out with Toad's invitations. I suspected something from what you told me and had a look at one or two. They were simply disgraceful. I confiscated the lot, and good old Mole is now sitting in the blue boudoir filling up plain, simple invitation cards."
At last, the hour for the banquet began to draw near, and Toad, who on leaving the others had retired to her bedroom, was still sitting there, melancholy and thoughtful. Her brow resting on her paw, she pondered long and deeply. Gradually, her countenance cleared, and she began to smile long, slow smiles. Then she took to giggling in a shy, self-conscious manner. At last, she got up, locked the door, drew the curtains across the windows, collected all the chairs in the room and arranged them in a semicircle, and took up her position in front of them, swelling visibly. Then she bowed, coughed twice, and, letting herself go, with uplifted voice, she sang to the enraptured audience that her imagination so clearly saw.
Lady Toad came home. There was panic in the parlours and howling in the halls, the crying in the cowsheds and shrieking in the stalls when Lady Toad came home. When Lady Toad came home, there was smashing in of window and crashing in of door. There was chivying of weasels that fainted on the floor when Lady Toad came home. Bang go the drums, the trumpeters are tooting and the soldiers are saluting. The cannon they are shooting and the motor cars are hooting. As the hero comes, shout hooray! And let each one of the crowd try and shout it very loud in an honour of an animal of whom you're justly proud, for it's Lady Toad's great day.
She sang this very loud with great unction and expression, and when she had done, she sang it all over again. Then she heaved a deep sigh, a long, long, long sigh. Then she dipped her hairbrush in the water jug, parted her hair in the middle, and plastered it down very straight and sleek on each side of her face, and, unlocking the door, went quietly down the stairs to greet her guests, who she knew must be assembling in the drawing room. All the animals cheered when she entered and crowded round to congratulate her and say nice things about her courage and her cleverness and her fighting qualities. But Toad only smiled faintly and murmured,
"Oh no, not at all, not at all."
Or sometimes for a change,
"Not at all, no, on the contrary."
Otter, who was standing on the hearthrug, describing to an admiring circle of friends exactly how she would have managed things had she been there, came forward with a shout, threw her arm round Toad's neck, and tried to take her round the room in triumphal progress. But Toad, in a mild way, was rather snubby to her, remarking gently as she disengaged herself,
"Badgers was the mastermind. Mole and Rat bore the brunt of the fighting. I merely served in the ranks and did little or nothing."
The animals were evidently puzzled and taken aback by this unexpected attitude of her, and Toad felt, as she moved from one guest to the other, making her modest responses, she was an object of absorbing interest to everyone. Badger had ordered everything of the best, and the banquet was a great success. There was much talking and laughter and chaff among the animals, but through it all, Lady Toad, who of course was in the chair, looked down her nose and murmured pleasant nothings to the animals on either side of her. At intervals, she stole a glance at Badger and Rat, and always when she looked, they were staring at each other with their mouths open, and this gave her the greatest satisfaction. Some of the younger and livelier animals, as the evening wore on, got whispering to each other that things were not so amusing as they used to be in the good old days, and there were some knockings on the table and cries of,
"Lady Toad! A speech!
Speech!
Speech from Lady Toad!
Speech from Lady Toad!
Song! Lady Toad song!"
But Toad only shook her head gently, raised one paw in mild protest, and, by pressing delicacies on her guests, by topical small talk, and by earnest inquiries after members of their families not yet old enough to appear at social functions, managed to convey to them that this dinner was being run on strictly conventional lines. She was, indeed, an altered Toad. After this climax, The four animals continue to lead their lives, so rudely broken in upon by civil war, in great joy and contentment, undisturbed by further risings or invasions. Lady Toad, after due consultation with her friends, selected a handsome gold chain and locket set with pearls, which she dispatched to the jailer's daughter with a letter that even Badger admitted to be modest, grateful, and appreciative. And the engine driver, in his turn, was properly thanked and compensated for all his pains and trouble. Under severe compulsion from Badger, even the barge woman was, with some trouble, sought out and the value of her horse discreetly made good to her. Though Toad kicked terribly at this, holding herself to be an instrument of fate sent to punish low women with mottled arms who couldn't tell a real lady when they saw one. The amount involved, it was true, was not very burdensome, the gypsy's valuation being admitted by local assessors to be approximately correct. As for Mole, she continued to divide her time between the riverbank and Mole End, enjoying the vibrancy of one and the anchorage of the other. Mr. Mole never made a return appearance, and in all truth, she was relieved about this. She was no longer the same young woman that had ventured up into the bright world on that fateful spring morning. Besides, she had company enough, even at Mole End, for the visits from the field mice grew ever more frequent over the years, as they too found anchorage in a place where they were always welcomed and well fed. Sometimes, in the course of long summer evenings, the friends would take a stroll together in the wild wood, now successfully tamed so far as they were concerned, and it was pleasing to see how respectfully they were greeted by the inhabitants, and how the mother weasels would bring their young ones, especially their girls, to the mouths of their holes and say, pointing,
"Look, baby, there goes the great Lady Toad. And that's the fearless water rat, a terrible fighter, walking along of her. And yonder comes the famous mole, of whom you so often have heard me tell."
But when their infants were fractious and quite beyond control, they would quiet them by telling how, if they didn't hush them and not fret them, the mighty grey badger would up and get them. This was a base libel on Badger, who, though she cared little about society, was rather fond of children. But it never failed to have its full effect.